Session number 8327, Harold Barrow, part one.
Could I ask you something, Mr. Barrow, about your family background? Whereabouts were you born and what sort of family were you born into?
Oh, just a very ordinary family, I should think. Mother was a fine woman who married father as his second wife. And so they had three children of their own, and then mother had two. So there were five of us. And then father died when he was about 52, and I'd only been two or three. Father was a paper merchant in Manchester. And at that time, I think the eldest son inherited quite a lot of the assets. They don't, not as they do now, you know. And I think possibly the eldest son, Willie, probably inherited some, most of it. It wasn't a great lot, you know. And I think mother sort of bought them out and ran the business herself for some time with the aid of a manager. And then the 1418 war came in, and she'd a rascal of a manager at one time that pinched quite a bit of money.
What were you doing? Were you working in the business or...?
No.
What were you doing at this time?
When I was about 14, I left school, went to an engineering works, a famous engineering works, Tommy Bradford's of Salford. It was known worldwide because they made laundry machinery for institutions and ships and all that, and farm churns and all that sort of thing. Anyway, after about 12 months there, possibly, we moved over to the other side of Manchester, and it was too far to go. So I got into Thomas Cook and Sons, the tourist agents.
Thomas Cook?
Thomas Cook's, the famous Thomas Cook's. And believe it or not, when I was perhaps 15 or 16, I was in charge of Thomas Cook's little office in the Midland Hotel, Manchester, at the lunchtime when the manager went for his lunch. But I could book British tickets like London, Edinburgh, Glasgow, or Liverpool, but I didn't do any foreign stuff. Just had a bit in the till and that was it. But it was quite a job for a young boy. And I could speak a little French. Just night school French, because that's where my brother and I went for 2 years, to night school, for bookkeeping and general commercial stuff.
Did you have any military experience at all before
none,
the outbreak?
None at all.
You didn't belong to the territorials
I think
or anything?
I think we belonged to a Boy Scout troop that failed. I don't know what happened. But he wasn't a very good scoutmaster, I don't think. So that faded out. And then after Thomas Cook and Son, I went into this bank on APRO. I've got the history of that. And it would be, I'd be perhaps 16, 17 then. And they took me on probation for 3 months. And after 3 months probation, they put me on the staff and gave me an increase in what they call an increment, which was an advance from £24 a year, or £26 a year, to 30. And put me on the staff. And of course I remained on that, joined the territorials, and eventually was called up. And I'd be 20 then, would I be? 19, 20.
What date was it when you joined up? When you actually entered the war? What date was it?
Oh, August the 4th, 1914.
When war broke out?
Yes.
You then, yes.
Yes. Because we were called up, you see, as a territorials. Yes.
So you were actually in the territorials before war broke out?
Yes, did one camp.
I see,
at Carnarvon.
Yes. What were you, what branch of the territorials were you in?
I was in the transport, horse transport. driving like GS wagons, water carts, ambulance, all sorts of what vehicles they had.
Were you attached to any particular regiment?
No, no. We were the medicals for the whole of the division.
And which division was that?
That would be the original division. Whether it was in being then as a division, I think it was, but there were different brigades. So there's three brigades probably in a division, and there was the East Lancs and the West Lancs and probably the North Lancs. Well, we would be the East Lancs, which composed of the Manchester regiments chiefly, and the Lancashire Fusiliers. And then the division had their own artillery, RFA. Then they'd have their own ASC, that was Army Service Corps, doing general transport work for the division, or in that case, with the brigade. And then we were a lone lot just doing transport work for the medical people, the doctors and the orderlies and all that, you know. That was our job. Wounded in case of war, or rations. When they were up the line, we were rather behind the line, taking the rations up where they were distributed to the people in the line.
And yes, I must ask you a lot about your actual jobs when we come on to the war.
Yes.
But before war broke out in August, did you have any feeling that something was afoot, that perhaps there might be a war?
No, I don't think so, really. We were quite... We never thought... The officers might have, the upper officers might have had something.
How did you react when war did break out? Can you remember how you felt?
Not especially. On the 3rd of August, one of my friends, this Arthur Jones, who was mentioned there, came round to see us and said, "Mrs. Barry, you know, Harold will be called up, we'll be called up tomorrow." His brother was a sergeant in the police force, and that's probably how Arthur knew. So when Arthur said, "Oh, you'll be called up to go to the army and all that," so Mother said, "Oh, no, you'd want a nurse with you or something." Anyway, much to Mother's surprise, about 7 o'clock in the morning, a policeman came round when they're calling up papers and to report at the barracks as soon as possible, which I did, so and I never went back to the bank.
What did it mean to you, war breaking out? Did you have any idea what such a war was going to be like?
I don't think so. A lot of people thought it would be over in a few weeks, you know, and except I think Kitchener seemed to be the hub of all affairs, and he thought it might be a long war. And of course they mobilised everybody, and then they got... There was a Lord Derby's scheme, and there was a Kitchener's army, all these PALS regiments, like the Manchester PALS were probably about, oh, what were the 6th, 7th and 8th Manchesters, and then it would go on perhaps to the 10th, and 11th, 12th, and so on, so 13 battalions of the Manchester Regiment, they'd call them the PALS. And also, and later on, what did they call these chaps? They were little fellows, one was about 5'2". How did they call them? I don't think they were a great success, really, because they were too small, perhaps. You know, perhaps if he got on the firing step, say, and it was down here, they probably couldn't see over the parapet, or they'd had hard work mounting a horse, or something like that. I forget what they called them. The Bantams. That was it. The Bantams. After the little hens, aren't they? Bantams.
Were they teased a lot, do you know?
Aye, we didn't see very much of them, but we'd one or two bantams with us, but they were like four bantam battalions.
So could you tell me now about your mobilisation? I suppose you would have been kitted up with a uniform already, wouldn't you, being a territorial?
Yes, and a walking out uniform. Very smart. And being mounted, we had spurs, you know, and in our dress affair, which was blue and cerise, I think it was. Rather very smart, and choked up to here, you know, and tight fitting with, padded up a bit to make you look better than you wear, you know. And of course, these spurs rather jangle, you know, in your best outfit. So, you know, you thought you were somebody a bit, really. Yeah. And when we used to go to church parade, say at Southport, and come home, undo all these collars, and lay on the bed, we were in billets on Lord Street, with a very classy place. And your pals would strip these tight-fitting trousers off. Oh, and you'd enjoy the relief of it.
And so course, where did you first go when you were mobilised? Where was your first sort of camp? Can you remember?
Yes, very well, very well. We'd have hundreds of horses, hundreds, literally hundreds of them, because the vets and their assistants all went round commandeering bakers' cart horses and milk floats, all railway horses, and we were all looking after them, and literally we'd hundreds of them.
Where were these horses kept?
Well, there was the RMC barracks out just outside Manchester, and then there were vacant fields. And we used to put horse lines down for them and tie them up, and shackle them and all the rest of it, you know. Aye. But, and then, if it's not boring you, the 18th Field Ambulance, they were regulars on reserve. And they joined up with us at Chalton Road where we were. And they took whatever equipment off us so as they could get out to France quickly. And my first introduction to them was a man, there was a pub not very far away. Of course, they were all older chaps than we were. I was 1920. And this fellow said, will you mind, sonny, holding these three horses for a few minutes? I said, no, all right. Of course, after a bit into the turn up, you know, I thought, oh, Blighty's gone into that pub and that's where he'd be, where his money lasts out. I thought, oh, be damned to this, young as I was. I tied them up to some railings, and the last time I saw these horses were going down the main road, dragging 2 or 3 yards of railing with them. I never saw those again. Very funny, really. Another tale that lasted a long time, if it's not boring, really. Well, we all set off from Upper Chalton Road, that was Manchester, to go to Turton, Bolton, which I should think was about 15 miles away. So we you know, had these various horses and everything, and we were all, you know, haversack, water bottle and what have you. And Major Wattleworth is our CO, a dapper little fellow, and he'd a very nice horse. And he said, oh, Barrow, I shall not be going to Turton. You take my horse and see that it has a safe passage and all the rest of it to Turton, and I'll see you later. Well, we'd gone about at least 2 miles. Let me just think, it would be. Anyway, about 2 miles. Perhaps a mile and a half, something like that. And one of the medical officers had not even got on his horse then. They were all birded up, as we used to call them. Haversack, map case. I would rather think they even had swords. But this poor chap, I remember his name sometime. Can't just remember it for the moment. Anyway, he hadn't got on his horse, and he had his batman with him. But every time he got on his horse to get on it, to get his foot in, it wheeled away from him. So I said, would you care to change horses, sir? said, this is a quiet horse. Well, we said, I'd be very grateful, to get rid of this beast. Well, I don't suppose he could ride in the first place. So he got on my nice horse, and I got in the horse that was called Topper. Oh, it seems funny. I hope I'm not boring you with it.
Not at all. This is very interesting.
Topper. Well, Topper was what they call a rat tail in the horsey men. It had a little stump of a tail with a few hairs on it. And then it also had a very hard mouth. You could pull on the rein. I think it must have been a van horse or something. And it did juggle all the way to Turton. And at one place where the band struck up, on quite a busy suburb of Salford, it backed and backed and backed, and if it hadn't been for the buttress between two shops, it would have landed backside into a butcher's shop. Anyway, I got it to Turton all right.
Did you have riding lessons?
Oh, yes, we'd passed out in the riding school.
Yes. When had that happened? Before the war?
Yes. Oh, yes, we used to attend once or twice a week to these barracks where there was a riding school, and the riding master would take us through, you know, without stirrups, cross stirrups, and halt, circle left, right, and all the rest of it, you know. So we became reasonable riders.
Because there's quite a skill to riding.
Oh, yes,
there?
Yes.
Yes. Did you find, though, when war broke out and suddenly all these horses were commandeered, did you find that a lot of men were put on horses who hadn't been taught to ride? Did you yourself see people?
Well, no, it wasn't their job, really. It was all the transport people who looked after all.
And you were all trained to ride?
Yes, and We didn't ride. Well, we rode a few of them, but we mostly manhandled three or four at a time. But this Topper business, well, we got to Bolton, and a chap named Sergeant Richardson said, "By the old Barrow, you had a rough time with that horse yesterday. I'll have a do at it in the morning." I said, "Right, so I thought you'd better welcome to it." Off. Sergeant Richardson got on this horse, and it was off like a flash. Got mixed up in the guide ropes of tents, and came an awful cropper along with the sergeant too. But strange thing, that wasn't the end of Topper. There was a very nice doctor officer who I knew quite well, or got to know him, a Captain Cockcroft, on the Royal Edward, who was rescued, and it would be at least a year afterwards, I'm sure, when we were at Suez, I saw Captain Cockcroft with his arm in a sling. I don't know whether I was in the RE's then or the medics, it didn't matter, but I said, "Good morning, sir, you know, and nice people. How do you do?" So "I'm all right." I said, "Well, there was a bit of desultory rifle fire at the time, not much, just an odd bit." And I thought, well, perhaps he's been hit. "So have you been hit?" I said. "No," he said, "it's that confounded horse, Topper." That was all that time, and old Topper was still leading the dance. Aye, nice fellow, Cockcroft.
So did you do most of your training in Lancashire?
Yes.
Or did you go elsewhere?
Well, except in Carnarvon, with a fortnight camp in Carnarvon. And it was, you know, on the...
What did your training consist of at this time?
Oh,
before you went
riding,
overseas?
Really. Riding, grooming horses, handling vehicles, training with a six-horse team or a four-horse team, or juggling about on a single mount or something like that.
Did you have any small arms training at all?
No, we had medical training. That was it. And on these field days, when at the beginning of the war, in a place like Southport, the drivers, the mounted section, would be sent out with labels on your sort of broken femur or, you know, stomach wounds or broken ankle or tread, what have you, all sorts of complaints. This would be on a disc on you, and we'd go over the golf course at Birkdale, and eventually they'd find us and they'd do the dressing on us and take us off on a stretcher, and then the MO would examine that section as to how they'd cope with all these wounds and that sort of thing. And that was their training. Our training was puppets, really, for them, till we got some horses.
So you weren't actually given the medical training, is that what you mean? Or
well, we
you?
Got some of it, you know. We got lectures on it, you know.
Yes.
And one of
the, what
one
what
of
do you mean you were puppets for them? That's what
well,
I can't quite
when
understand.
They, when they labelled us.
Oh, I see.
When
you
they
were
labelled
just
us.
The,
we were just
yes.
lying there in the sandals, and they found us and they'd dress us up and put head bandages on. Or
yes, this would have been the RAMC.
Yes,
you were
the medical
for.
Orderlies.
Yes.
Put tourniquets on. Mm.
But you had to learn medical facts.
Some of it, because we had
well.
Lectures, really.
Because you were the first field ambulance,
yes.
weren't you?
Yes, we could. We could attend to wounded. We could always put a tourniquet on, which you've got to label to say how long it's been on.
Is that so?
Yes, you
yes.
should
what,
be.
Yes. Was there a sort of set procedure for dressing wounds?
Yes.
And, passing on information as to what
I was like to stop bleeding, you know, and never give any a wounded man with a stomach wound, never give them a drink. You could wet the lid, but don't give them a drink of water, else it would cause perhaps peritonitis or something. Things like that, you know. Which was quite interesting, really, and then we went for long marches to get us fit. We're always marching.
Did you have a load to carry on these marches?
Yes, sometimes. It was full pack, you know.
Where did you march? Where did you go?
Well, we did all round Southport, Meals, and in Liverpool. We were at Croxteth Park and Lord Sefton's place. We marched all over Liverpool. The doctors were all very nice.
So your job really was to provide the transport
that's all.
For that, the yeah. RAMC
yes.
and the doctors,
that's
is that
it.
Right?
Yes.
Yes.
And the rations, you know, the grub, and taking anybody who was ill or anybody like that, you know.
How did you get on with the local civilians while
oh,
you were
Oh, very
training?
Well. They thought a lot of us.
Did they make
yes.
a fuss of you?
Yes.
What did they do? What sort of
oh,
things?
Oh, say in Liverpool. At perhaps at the greengrocer's stall, help yourself, boys. And free rides on the buses or the ferries, I think we got. And different things like that, you know. Of course, when we were at Crowborough, there was practically nothing there. It was a very small place then in those days.
When did you go to Crowborough? Before you went to Gallipoli, was it?
Oh, yes. We'd be there in, I should think, the spring of 1915, I should think. Aye, and it was a nice place of training. And one of our nicest duties was to go down to the village smithy, I should think you'd call it, where they had a chaff cutting machine, and to put a bale of hay through, or straw of chaff for the horses, you know. And we used to have like penny bets on it, weren't much money. I thought, what did we get? One and twopence a day, I think. Of which I sent sixpence home to mother. And the government augmented it by sixpence. So I had about eightpence a day. So we hadn't much money, so we used to bet in pennies and twopences who could go through, you know, time it and all that sort. Perhaps have a glass of beer at the local country pub.
How did you get on with the people in Crowborough, in Sussex?
Well, there's so very few of them, but they were very nice people we met.
And what sort of camp was it? Did you live in huts when you were at Crowborough, or were you in tents?
There were some huts at Crowborough. So yes, there were some huts and tents. But one episode was that the powers that be decided that they would clear this land where there'd been a lot of trees cut down. Trees of you know, trunks about that.
About
this
10 inches
size.
Wide, yes.
Yes, long things like telegraph poles. Well, we shifted all these trees, these trunks, only trunks, no branches on them, cleared them off aside to make a bit of a parade ground, you see. Well, you must stack these new cut trees properly as they go into all sorts of shapes, you see, while the sap's running. So we have to put them all back on the supervision of a forester to lay them out the proper way. So that was it. But it was never very nice army at Crowborough.
How did you get on with your officers in the First Field Ambulance?
Very well. All except one fellow who'd had a bit of experience in the South African War. He was a bit naughty. He used to try and surprise people on night duty, you know. Till we were armed, not with guns, with batons, if you like to call them. Anyway, one fellow thought this chap was attacking him, so he let fly with his baton and hit this officer right on his wristwatch. So I think he was a bit more careful in future. He wasn't a very nice man. He was the police doctor in Salford, I think. But the rest of them were very, very nice fellows. Very nice indeed. We lost two very nice fellows on the Edward, Captain Marshall and Captain Hayhurst. Very nice fellows. Hayhurst was a good rugby player. I played for an army team once or twice in Southport. And unfortunately, I think in the opposing team, there were one or two professional rugby players and another scratch lot, you know. And the poor old parson who played for them, he got badly hurt, and I think we abandoned the match. I think he'd done something to his spine. But there it was.
But the relations between the officers and men, would you say, were fairly close?
Oh, very good. Very good.
There wasn't a great gap between felt you could approach them with problems.
Oh yes,
didn't you?
They were very nice people. Very nice indeed.
They looked after you well.
Yes. Very good.